Technology could help us adapt to climate change, but that is not a universally popular idea. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, demystifying the digital economy. I'm Molly Wood. All week long, we've been exploring how technology can help us adapt to climate change in a series we're calling How We Survive. But this idea of using money and technology to adapt to climate change versus using money and technology to prevent or mitigate or slow down warming in order to avoid climate change, well, it's controversial. Some see it as giving up on mitigation, taking resources away from slowing warming. And there is a reasonable fear that any technology solutions will only be available to the wealthy. So let's discuss this in Quality Assurance, How We Survive edition, with Marketplace senior correspondent and longtime climate reporter Scott Tong. He told me, yeah, the conversation has changed.
You know, when I started covering climate change about a decade ago, most of the focus was on mitigating the problem, right? Preventing it from happening, preventing it from getting worse. And so if you focused on the effects of it, if you focused on adapting to these problems, the idea was you're perhaps taking attention away from preventing the problem in the first place. Now, climate change is far more a reality. So I think naturally, the conversation is becoming less theoretical about adapting to what's happening because it's happening.
Let's dig into this idea of adaptation versus mitigation. Where's the split there?
In some cases, that's a real question, right? We have limited resources and there's not enough to go around in any of those places, right? Not enough research and funding and scale going into, say, ways for us to create energy and take all those climate emissions and put them into the ground, right? So-called carbon capture and storage. In some cases, the technologies are a little bit proven. They're certainly not scaled, and you need money for that. You perhaps need a lot of money, and we don't know exactly what the answer is, so you can't really pick the winner, just need to support that area in general. And at the same time, these impacts are already happening. People who are dealing with rising seas, with crops that don't produce the way they used to, with unpredictable weather. So all of these things are big planetary scale challenges that need resources. So how do you divvy up? How do you decide where this money needs to go, where this research needs to go?
Are there other unintended consequences we think about as we pursue these technologies for either mitigation or adaptation that we should really challenge?
You know, the historians of science and technology often go back to the Industrial Revolution. We think about the automobile and how it changed life. Well, the climate impacts didn't come along for 50 years. Right? A lot of the scientists didn't start to ask the question until, say, the 1950s. And for them, it's an example of, being maybe not pessimistic about technology, but kind of understanding what the cost might be. And the costs sometimes aren't very apparent. And we just have to be mindful of that when we think about a technology that is going to be one of the solutions going forward.
You know, we've talked to investors who say when you imagine adaptation, it might be a dome over a city or a magical new seawall. And these are technologies that literally don't exist yet. But in the short term, is it possible that adaptation means tech transfer, you know, whether it's overcoming intellectual property issues or making sure that Africa gets access to technology that already exists in Japan, and that transfer will be part of adaptation in itself?
I mean, it's a great opportunity for the innovators who have created some of these technologies that, as you say, exist already. It's also a real challenge because as some of the experts who look at this describe it to me, a lot of the innovators and the people who think about these solutions and fund them, they are in the rich world. They may not understand the urgency of people who are living it today, right? People who are most exposed and spend most of their lives outside. The people in the rich countries tend not to have that. So that's part of the challenge of bringing that. At the same time, this costs money. And in these climate conversations that have been, you know, happening yearly under the auspices of the UN, the emerging economies, the developing countries, one of the first things they say is, we're asking for the resources for these technologies to be shared with us. And the next part of their conversation is because, you know, where the problem was created in the first place, it was mostly in the rich world.
That's Marketplace senior correspondent Scott Tong. And now for some related links. Thanks to Andrew Revkin, who writes for National Geographic. He tweeted me a link to a piece he did back in January on how adaptation is gaining steam as something that has to go hand in hand with mitigation. And in the piece, he talks about how in 1992, when Al Gore wrote Earth in the Balance about the need for climate action, he called adaptation, quote, a kind of laziness. But by 2013, when he wrote The Future, Gore wrote that he was, quote, wrong in not immediately grasping the moral imperative of pursuing both policies simultaneously in spite of the difficulty that poses. Andrew's piece is great. There's a link to it on our website, marketplacetech.org. And on the other side of the conversation, Brendan Slaughterback sent a tweet saying he was disappointed with the introduction to this series and wrote, quote, any discussion of adaptation should begin with a clear-eyed look at where we're headed under current emissions, a future in which the ability to adapt is itself in question. And he sent a link to a 2011 piece in The Grist along those lines. And I would love to know what you guys think. Should we adapt? Should we mitigate? Can we hope for the best and prepare for the worst at the same time? And also, what else do you want to hear on this topic? Like I said, we'll have stories roughly every 2 weeks in the coming months. So please tweet me at Molly Wood or email us mptech@marketplace.org. And shameless plug alert, I am now a contributing writer at Wired, and I wrote a column this week about the controversy over adaptation and how, in a weird way, nerds like me who read and watch a lot of sci-fi have a bit of a logical affinity for the idea that technology can handle this. Even though I'm obviously not an oblivious cheerleader for tech fixing everything. You can read that column on our site, marketplacetech.org, or find it at wired.com. Okay, let's talk about other people, shall we? Stephanie Hughes produces Marketplace Tech. Eve Tro is our senior producer. Sarah Bruguer is our engineer. Matt Purdy has been helping us with production all week. Special thanks to the APM project, The Water Main, which is helping support this series. I'm Molly Wood. Have a great weekend, everybody. This is APM. As a nonprofit news organization, Marketplace is able to do what we do every day thanks to funding from public radio stations, foundations, corporate underwriters, and yes, listeners like you. Thank you to all the Marketplace investors who've contributed over the last year for helping keep public service journalism going strong. We really appreciate your support.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.